Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer. Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Fraser Nelson. So today it looks like cross-party talks have officially broken down. Here's what Jeremy Corbyn had to say.
The government has not moved its position fundamentally. There are fundamental disagreements. We want to have a customs arrangement with the European Union that protects jobs and trade, and we want to have a dynamic relationship on rights.
Fraser, are you surprised about this development?
I'm not sure they were ever going to come to fruition. This was, I guess, Theresa May wanted to show willingness to an extent, Jeremy Corbyn did too, but they would realise they probably would have split their parties had they agreed anything. I mean, Theresa May thought for a while, well, maybe my Tory party will think, oh, we'll do anything to stop you going into coalition with Corbyn, so we're going to vote through your deal to stop the deal that you're otherwise going to do with Corbyn. She's got to the stage now where she's just making these kind of Hail Mary passes the whole time. Just there's a whole bunch of things. I mean, even having another vote on her deal is holding out for a miracle. So that's what she has been doing for a while. And I think it's been some time before anybody in any party really expected this to end any other way.
I think the problem with these cross-party talks is you needed both May and Corbyn at the same time to be prepared to split their parties. And I think whilst Theresa May was prepared to take that risk, you know, I mean, she hasn't got much left to lose. And if she could get Brexit somehow over the line in whatever damaged form, that would be some kind of legacy for her. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn, even if he himself personally is kind of quite keen for Brexit to happen and get out of the way, I think it became clear that he would be splitting his party if he did that, and he wasn't prepared to take that risk.
So, Fraser, given that these cross-party talks have failed, do you think this means that we won't see any more Labour support when Theresa May brings back her withdrawal agreement in June? Or do you think they could support her passively by saying abstaining on that second reading?
There was always the prospect of about 30 Labour MPs supporting Theresa May's deal, because there was a consensus that if they thought that would get it over the line, they would do it just to put an end to it. But now that the Brexit party's come along, there are so many Tories who are even less inclined to support Theresa May's deal, thinking that that would split the party and their membership and their voters would not simply not put up with it. So I think this is going to be a very quick burial for Theresa May's deal. This is more sort of her going out with military honours, really. C'est magnifique, mais c'est pas le gars.
And James, what was the sticking point for Labour in the end? Was it a second referendum or was it a permanent customs union? Like, it was a bit confusing, I thought, about what exactly they wanted.
I thought Jeremy Corbyn's letter to Theresa May saying, you know, these talks are over, it's clear it's all politics, isn't it? Because the letter isn't actually saying, oh my word, I can't believe that you want X, Y, or Z. It's like, oh, it's so difficult to do a deal with such a divided government. You know, we've got cabinet ministers contradicting, you know. It's designed, it's a political letter. It's not a, oh, I'm terribly sorry, but we disagree. Mm. And I think one of the slightly comic things about these talks is that if you allow Jeremy Corbyn and Theresa May's visions of Brexit, they use different language. But actually, they want very similar things. Right. It's just the problem is that they're parties. And I think Jeremy Corbyn, one of the things that Jeremy Corbyn has always been very aware of is not doing something that would cause, you know, his MPs to walk out. And I think he knows that doing a deal which didn't include a second referendum could have been one of those things. So he has pulled back from that.
We're just seeing just some more soil being thrown on the coffin of Theresa May's deal here. I mean, this process will go on for a while. I mean, it's strange that it's taking so long. But I can't really see anything changing here until there's a new Conservative Party leader. And that's what the debate will quickly turn to. And Boris Johnson has now officially declared that he's running. So add to that, we've got Rory Stewart having declared his intention, Jeremy Hunt. Whatever the next solution is will come from one of them. I suspect it won't involve talks with the Labour Party.
And James, when it comes to the Labour Party, I mean, when did they become so in support of the second referendum? I mean, there was the recess, and then when we came back, it seems like everyone was in support of the second referendum. When did that happen, and why did it happen?
I mean, I still don't think everyone in the Labour Party is in support of a second referendum. I think the key point is the Labour whips office are very in support of a second referendum. And the bulk of Labour MPs are. One of the other things that I think is pushing more Labour people towards a second referendum is, if you look at these European election polls, you are beginning to see some the Lib Dems revive as a Remain second referendum party. And I think, so I think there is, you know, Labour MPs are beginning to think that they are, now, that there is electoral risk for them in not backing the second referendum. You know, and this is where the dynamic plays out. I mean, and again, though, what the we come back to this perennial problem, which is there isn't a majority for anything in the House of Commons. You know, it's not like Theresa May is the block to a second referendum. No. It's not that, you know, if she goes, suddenly the House of Commons will vote for it. It won't. And so I am, you know, the thing that is so perplexing about Brexit right now is because there isn't a majority for anything, what is going to happen in the end?
But we used to talk about this like a few months ago, that everyone thinks if they just waited out, there's become more likely. Now it does look like things are getting filtered out. Theresa May's deal, for example, looks like it's one of the first to go. But, and then we'll end up with a second referendum, see, or a general election.
But I don't mean Theresa May. I mean, Steve Barclay this week, the Brexit Secretary, was trying to say, oh, if you don't vote for it, Theresa May's deal, now it's dead. I don't think Theresa May's deal ever dies in that way. Because let's say we got to October when this Brexit extension runs out, and the EU said, well, you can't have another extension, so you've got to choose between leaving without a deal and revoke. At that point, I think people will start saying, well,
come back to the deal.
What about the deal? And so I think this is the kind of the thing, which is everyone, I mean, Theresa May is running out of time, right? Like, she is, I don't, you know, you would be able to knock me down with a feather if she was still Prime Minister in October. But the point is that everyone still thinks that by holding out, they're going to get the second referendum. People think that, you know, the more that Parliament is paralysed and can't make a decision, you have to end up going back to a country. The people who want to leave without a deal think, you know, just not May's deal out, the new Tory leader would go for no deal. You know, all of these things, this is the problem, right? So we are still stuck in this mindset where MPs don't think that they don't want to compromise because they still think they can get what they want.
And one other thing that was, I thought, just not given enough credence in the cross-party talks was this idea of permanent of a customs union until the next general election. Did Labour even consider that properly? Surely it sounds good for them because then they can try to win the next election and then they can pursue a permanent customs union.
But the issue with that is it's not very much of a concession by the government, given that there is a 2-year standstill transition in the deal.
Mm.
You're really not offering them.
So it's the same
very
as
much.
Before.
Yeah, I mean, it's mildly different. And again, one of the other ironies here is, you know, what is the UK-wide backstop but a temporary customs union? And so, I mean, I think all of this stuff is, you know, all of this stuff is this was all about politics, not about policy. I mean, it's the wrong way around to think that they were sitting there saying, well, I'm worried about rules of origin checks. I mean, it was not that.
I have to say, as an optimist, I was sort of hoping that it was going to be slightly more that than politics. I mean, would Labour voters punish them at the European Parliament elections, do you think?
I think if you look at it, Labour, I think both main parties, the Tories are obviously going to have a way worse night.
Of course.
But I think both main parties are going to have a bad night. And I think that part of the thing which we're going to see here is, you know, there's a poll out today which has the Brexit Party top and then the Lib Dems second.
Mm.
And I think the danger is that this debate just keeps on polarising rather than coming towards any kind of resolution.
James, the other thing on conservative minds this week is the definition of Islamophobia put forward by Muslim groups across the country led by the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Muslims. It says, Islamophobia is rooted in racism and is a type of racism that targets expressions of Muslimness or perceived Muslimness. The government's been reluctant to adopt this and has appointed 2 government advisers to look into it a bit more. James, what do you think about this definition?
I think Fraser's column in The Telegraph on this is right, which is, look, obviously anti-Muslim bigotry should be called out. I think there is a problem with the definition, which is how it limits debate. And I think the point is, you do need to be able to challenge the tenets of a religion. I think if you once you start, and I think the danger with this definition is that it could make it harder to discuss certain issues around, say, for example, Sharia law, that are legitimate topics of public discourse. And I think that's the problem. I'm also very wary about policing speech in this way. I mean, obviously, you need to be very clear that if people just want to rail against Muslims, that is not acceptable. But I am very wary of the idea of saying, these things can't,
Islam is not the same as Muslims.
Exactly. And I think that, I also think the point is that Fraser makes in his column, and I think it's a good point, which is, there are people within Islam who are uncomfortable with this idea and this definition because they think that it makes it harder for them to have some of the debates they want to have about the correct ways in which,
like,
to,
Sarah
to,
Khan, the countering extremisms are
to interpret text. And I think there is a fundamental difference between religion and race, because people should be able to challenge religions.
But James, do you think this is the beginning of something possibly quite toxic for the Conservative Party, in that you've got people like Baroness Saeed Awazi, who is lending credibility to people who are supporting this definition and saying that the Tories are Islamophobic if they don't do this?
The Tory Party problem actually is that it hasn't come down hard enough on people who aren't involved in some subtle discussion about Islam, but are involved in something that is much closer to anti-Muslim hatred. People who say that they wouldn't, for example, people who say that they wouldn't vote for Sajid Javid because he is a Muslim, right? Mm. That is just clearly prejudice and bigotry, and political parties should kick people out who hold those views. That, I think, is where the danger is for the Tories, because of Labour and the whole anti-Semitism question, there is more scrutiny of the views of party members on these kind of topics. And the Tories have got to show that they are going to be better at dealing with this than the Labour Party have been. And that doesn't mean that you kick people out who express their views on Sharia law, but people who are indulging in something that, that is clearly just anti-Muslim prejudice, you should.
James and Fraser, thanks very much. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do leave us a review. We always like to hear from you. And do join us again tomorrow, when we will be releasing our inaugural Saturday Coffee House Shots. It's going to be a great one if you are a Eurovision fan. Thanks for listening.
C'est magnifique. When every night your loved one holds you tight. Oh la la la. C'est magnifique. But when one day your loved one drifts away, oh la la la.